Hey, how's it going, y'all?
Check it out. It's me, Scott.
It's the Scott Horton Show.
I'm him.
Thanks for tuning in to the show today. Caffeine just not kicking in. Slow morning getting my act together. I admit it. But I got one guest, and it's a good one. It's Mitch Prothero from McClatchy Newspapers. We'll be reporting from Irrible for us. And, boy, is there a lot going on in the Iraq war right now. And speaking of which, I'm giving a talk about the Iraq war this Friday afternoon at 2 o'clock at the Radisson in Manchester, New Hampshire. It's the Liberty Forum. And it's this huge freaking thing. People keep asking me, what is this thing that you're giving this speech at? You know, I don't really know, but I think that there's about 25 speakers or something. I don't know. Was it? Yeah. There's a lot of people speaking there on a lot of stuff for 3 days. Man, the list, it just keeps going and going. Many, many speakers there. I'm going on 2 o'clock Friday afternoon. Against the terror war, or why not to fight ISIS? That's my speech. So if you live up in one of them Yankee towns or Yankee states up there in the Northeast, why not hop, skip, and jump right over to New Hampshire? It ain't that far. And watch me say the same stuff you hear me say here on the radio every day. If you're into that kind of thing. We'll shake hands. I'll give you a sticker. It'll be great. All right. That's in Manchester on Friday. I'll probably mention that again a little later in the show. I got a ton of news to cover, though. But before I do, I need to say thank you. Holy crap, guys. Thank you. Seriously. If I had feelings, I would cry right now, I bet. Because I am just amazed and surprised. It took less than a day for the Kickstarter to be successful. Less than a day. We said, hey, we need $675 in order to pay the genius to do the job and to cover the cost of the kickbacks everybody gets, either a book or a silver coin or a something. Anyway, so there we go. 12 people did it. I had one person ask me specifically not to say his name, so that makes me think I really ought to email everyone and make sure it's okay to thank them all out loud on the air. People appreciate their privacy, you know. But that's it. 12 people. That's all it took. Some of these donations were pretty dang good sized. That was my Kickstarter. It's already over. But don't feel left out, because we're going to do another one of these very soon, because Sneaker says that the servers are totally falling apart and absolutely have to be replaced now. And so that's going to be about $1,000, and that's going to be in just another couple of weeks or something. We're going to get that together. Top priority, says Sneaker, the server keeper. So we're going to get on that. But thank you so much to everybody who donated. It's really kind of you to kick in like that. And I think it's going to be such a great project, right? 3,600, all 3,600 interviews up there on YouTube. And there have been people before. There's a thing called Liberty in Our Time on YouTube. That was a channel that had a whole bunch of my interviews up there in YouTube form. For a little while there. And, you know, I don't know how much traffic these things will get, but we'll see. It'll be nice to at least, you know, have them from going forward from here. You know, they're easier to pass around YouTube links, I guess. People rather click on a YouTube link than an MP3 link. Are you afraid you'll get a virus from an MP3 link? Is that it? I think it's pretty hard to put a virus in MP3, isn't it? But people trust a YouTube link. They figure it's been checked by Google and it's okay. I think maybe that's part of it. Anyway, I'm cool with it. So thanks, everybody. I'm glad you agreed that it was a good idea for a project. And I don't know how long it'll take, but the guy, Matt, that helped put this thing together, he has vetted this guy named Carlos, who is a level 25 computer genius, or I don't know what level exactly or who does the certificate or what, but he's some kind of genius who looks at this complicated thing and says, oh, yeah, I can do that. Yep, and I can do that too. All right, cool, hired. So it's on. Thank you to Carlos, and he's given us a discount too. Extra double thanks to Carlos, who's given us a break because it's for a good cause. It's all libertarian foreign policy, meaning all 100% anti-war stuff on every issue, on all the wars. So because of that, he's given us a break. So thank you to Carlos. Thank you to Matt for putting this thing together. Thank you very much, everybody who's donated. It took, I don't know, the middle of last night, it was over. You know, I don't know. I got up this morning, it was over. We're $15 over already or something. So there it is. Awesome. Thank you, guys. That's cool. All right. So I think I talked about that pretty good. And by the way, at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show, you can see all my speeches that I've ever given there, pretty much. Oh, I don't know. That one about Iran back in like 2006 or 7, that one might not be there at UT. I wonder if I have that. But anyway, and then, yeah, soon all my interviews will be there. So subscribe to the YouTube channel, youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. Okay, cool. All right, now let me talk about, I guess David Petraeus, just so I can get out of the way here real quick. I don't want to go on and on about it. But David Petraeus has gotten in hardly any trouble at all. He's had to plead guilty to a misdemeanor of keeping a classified document in a place where it ain't supposed to be. Which is amazing. Come on. It's amazing that someone of that stature could be charged with anything, would have to plead guilty to anything. Are you kidding? I don't believe it. I mean, I know it's happening, but I'm saying I don't think it's because a prosecutor is sworn to uphold the law and therefore is doing this. I think it's politics. And, you know, I don't have any evidence of this or anything, but doesn't it make perfect sense that this would be pro-Bush family people in the CIA using the FBI to set him up? Or maybe just CIA people who hate Petraeus, whether they like Jeb Bush or not. Apparently he came to the CIA barking orders like a general, and everybody was like, whatever. And that's what they said, right? Everybody at CIA didn't like General Petraeus so much. And he only came there with one mission, which was to write his own reports about how he won the Afghan war that he lost. Good job. But anyway, so a couple of points to make, I guess. One, Snowden has a sense of humor and said, there, see, give me a deal like that and I'll come home. Charge me with a misdemeanor of, downloading a classified document and putting it on the wrong hard drive. And, I'll make the same deal. Oh, see, I forgot to mention the part about how what he really did was give a bunch of classified information to someone who did not have the right to it. His mistress and so-called biographer, sort of David Frum to George W. Bush, Paula Broadwell, his bitch. And anyway, he told her who were the names of all the covert operatives in Afghanistan, according to this Yahoo News story from yesterday, or maybe it was an AP story repeated there. He told the name of every covert operative in Afghanistan? Why? Pillow talk. Anyway, so it on one hand, it goes to show that the rule of law doesn't really apply, or he'd be tried under the Espionage Act, the same as everybody else Obama's prosecuted for it, right? But it also goes to show somebody's out to get Petraeus, and I'm happy for that because I hate that guy more than Jeb even. Liar, that guy. I don't mind that he lost two wars. He had no right to win them, but the lies. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here, and I'm so excited about Commodity Discs from CommodityDiscs.com. They're 1 ounce silver pieces with a QR code engraved on the back side. Scan the code with your phone and get the instant spot price. Commodity discs are paving the way forward for the alternative currency community in America and around the world. The QR code commodity disc. Technology has now finally made a real free market silver currency viable. And anyone who donates $100 or more to the Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate gets one free. That's commoditydiscs.com. Hey, I'm Scott Horton here for The Future of Freedom, the monthly journal of the Future Freedom Foundation at fff.org/subscribe. Since 1989, FFF has been pushing an uncompromising moral and economic case for peace, individual liberty, and free markets. Sign up now for The Future Freedom, featuring founder and president Jacob Hornberger, as well as Sheldon Richmond, James Bovard, Anthony Gregory, Wendy McElroy, and many more. It's just $25 a year for the print edition, $15 per year to read it online. That's fff.org/subscribe. And tell them Scott sent you.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show.
So, yeah, you know, I mentioned this yesterday, and I had thought that, I believe it was Tony Carone on Twitter, I thought he must have misunderstood or something. I had missed that part of Netanyahu's speech, but here he is in the text here. He accuses Iran of helping Al-Qaeda bomb the U.S. embassies in Africa. What?
That's the first I've ever even heard of that one. I mean, we talk all the time about how it was Osama bin Laden and Al-Qaeda that attacked the Khobar Towers in 1996, and yet the Saudis and the Israelis preferred that supposed Iranian-backed Saudi Hezbollah was responsible. And so politics won out, and Louis Free, who never told a true thing in his whole life, decided to pin that one on Iran and let Osama get away with it. And you know, so we can see, obviously, there's a move throughout the entire 1990s. You may be familiar with Lori Milroy, who wrote Saddam Hussein's Unfinished War with the United States, an entire long-term propaganda campaign, a very official, top-down American Enterprise Institute conspiracy theory about Saddam and Al-Qaeda. But then, yeah, whatever. They're all in an axis together, right? What are you going to do, read a book about it? Yeah, no, trust Netanyahu. He's here to tell you that Iran now, never mind Iraq, now it's Iran that runs Al-Qaeda. You can go read in the Weekly Standard, too. They go, ooh, look at all this evidence. A guy sent me this the other day. Hey, Scott, look, Weekly Standard says ties between Iran and Al-Qaeda. And then what's the article? That Iran arrested a bunch of Al-Qaeda guys? And then Al-Qaeda had to kidnap one of their diplomats in order to ransom their guys back? Wow, yeah, they sure are tied together, huh? It's like, you're tied to me because you're listening to this show right now, I guess. And it's like, I'm tied to all the Canadians since I live in Texas, and Texas is part of America, and America touches Canada up there at the touchline where all the Homeland Security goons live and revenue. That's a verb. Anyway, so yeah, this Netanyahu, boy, he doesn't get tired of lying ever, does he? Yeah, lying's a lot of fun. I'll tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to America. I'm going to tell a bunch of lies to a bunch of idiots. America is easily moved. 80% of them support us. It's absurd, Netanyahu said in the year 2001 on video. It's absurd how Americans support him. Support his government, support his state. Anyway, so let's see. Basically, lie number one, big lie number one, is that the Iranians mean Israel any harm anyway. Oh, please. They give a little bit of money to Hamas. And in fact, they're kind of on the outs, right? Since Hamas supported the uprising in Syria. You do have a Sunni-Shia split there, even though they have traditionally backed Hamas. But Hamas really isn't a terrorist group anymore as much as they are the democratically elected government of the Gaza Strip. Just like when the ear gun got elected and went from terrorist group to the state of Israel, that kind of thing. It was an election, after all, that Israel and America insisted upon. And in fact, they had a coalition government with the Palestinian Authority until the Americans and the Israelis and Hosni Mubarak, the fascist sock puppet military dictatorship of Egypt at the time, funneled a bunch of weapons to the PLA, which fell into the hands of Hamas, which used them to kick the PLA's ass out of Gaza and seize complete control of it. So much for the coalition. They murdered Yasser Arafat, or what? It's only like a 98% chance that the Israelis poisoned and murdered Yasser Arafat, who, because he was too good at doing business with them. He gave up terrorism back in 1988. He swore to recognize Israel back in 1988. And so, geez, how long can we go on not making peace with this guy? Became a real problem, so they murdered him. Anyway, then he goes on and he says, Assad is the enemy. Should be America's enemy in Syria, even though his enemy are Al-Qaeda, the Al-Nusra Front, Jabhat al-Nusra, and the breakoff group ISIS, which is, you know, ISIS themselves claim Osama bin Laden, they just don't like Zawahiri. And Assad is their number one enemy, really, in the region. But we're supposed to be worried about Iran backing Assad? Because what, America should prefer for Al-Qaeda to own all of Syria? Boy, you think there's chaos in Syria now. Wait till the state army is gone, and every last Christian and Shiite and Alawite's neck is up for grabs by the Islamic State and al-Nusra. These people are crazy. They're crazy. Cuckoo bananas. Completely ridiculous. Backed by Iran, Shiite militias are rampaging through Iraq, Netanyahu says. Yeah, well, everyone knows that Netanyahu personally encouraged America to invade Iraq because it was going to be great. And then what ended up happening is majority rules in a democracy, dude, and majority means the 60% Shiites got elected. And they're, more to the point, their power factions, the United Iraqi Alliance of the Supreme Council for Islamic Revolution in Iraq and the Dawa Party, and then also Muqtada al-Sadr. But the first two of those being cat's paws of Iran all along, and Sadr ended up becoming more and more close to Iran as America accused him of being the pro-Iranian militia man that they, or warlord, when in fact he wanted America and Iran out and to have a nationalist Arab government there rather than a sectarian one. But, you know, he did participate in the civil war, especially in 06 and 07, to kick the Sunnis out of Baghdad at that point. But that was after years of this. But anyway, the point is, it was America's war that Netanyahu and the Israelis wanted us to fight that put the Iranians in influence in Iran, in Iraq. They don't completely own it, lock, stock, and barrel. But, you know, America doesn't completely own Canada either. But then again, yeah, we do, kinda. Same thing. But that's only because of America's foreign policy, the one that Netanyahu himself encouraged. And then he says, backed by Iran, the Houthis are seizing control of Yemen. But I haven't seen a lick of evidence that Iran is behind that. The Houthis have been fighting in Yemen for years, and the government fell apart because everybody else hates it too. And the Houthis were energized in their fight as America built Al-Qaeda up by bombing it. And with every bomb, growing it bigger and bigger, and then the Houthis got their act together to resist Al-Qaeda, which was worse than the Saleh and then Hadi governments. And so, anyway, to blame all that on Iran, maybe they are getting some money and guns from Iran, but I haven't seen any proof of that. And to pretend that that's just some kind of Iranian invasion of the Arabian Peninsula or something like that is a ridiculous hoax. As much as it might sound like a nice talking point. Oh no, Iran will have a choke point on the world's oil supply in the Red Sea. Does he mean Israel's oil supply? Is that what he meant?
Hey, Al Sky here. First, I want to take a second to thank all the show's listeners, sponsors, and supporters for helping make this show what it is. I literally couldn't do it without you. And now I want to tell you about the newest way to help support the show. Whenever you shop at Amazon.com, stop by ScottHorton.org first and just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page. That way the show will get a kickback from Amazon's end of the sale. It won't cost you an extra cent. And it's not just books. Amazon.com sells just about everything in the world except cars, I think. So whatever you need, they've got it. Just click the Amazon logo on the right side of the page at ScottHorton.org. Or go to ScottHorton.org/Amazon.
All right, you guys, welcome back.
Again, the big news and the big thanks is about the Kickstarter. It took less than one day to raise all the money to hire the genius to put all 3,600 interviews on YouTube. So thank you again, everybody, for helping out with that. All right, today's guest, I guess our one and only guest today, it's our friend Mitch Prothero, reporter for McClatchy Newspapers, reporting out of Erbil in Kurdistan. Welcome back to the show, Mitch. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. How are you?
I'm doing okay, except I just pronounced Kurdistan very strangely. It's kind of a put an E sound in there where it didn't belong. I don't know. I don't talk good for a radio guy. Tell me, there's a giant war going on.
Anyway, so.
Wait, what?
We call it the KRG, the Kurdistan Regional Government.
The KRG, there you go. Well, see, I need to get with the lingo, I guess. Hey, so there's a giant war going on. Tell me all about it. The battle for Tikrit?
Yeah, it's a pretty big operation. This is the third or fourth one, depending on your counting, where they've either tried to keep or retake Tikrit from the Islamic State. But this one is obviously a little bit more serious and organized than the previous, at least two that were, or three that were complete debacles. It's a combination of Iraqi army troops, mostly special forces, and Shia militias led by an Iranian general who's being pretty open about his involvement in the whole thing, have surrounded Tikrit on three or four sides and are basically pushing in on Saddam Hussein's old hometown.
Mm. All right, now, in the previous attempts, I guess I only know the one where they went and occupied part of the university for a little while in the center of town, something like that, but never really could hold it. Is that basically what happened the first few times, little incursions like that? And this is an altogether different
attempt? No, there was a major one back in the fall where they tried to push up. There was a few. Well, right after it fell, they dropped off guys via helicopter into the university, and it was just a massacre. Everything went – it was a complete debacle. I think this was before the Iraqi government got it in their brains that maybe their guys were a little outmatched by the Islamic State. Then I think it was in November, might have been a month earlier, might have been September, October. They did try to do a major push up from Samarra where they pushed up the highway in an effort to retake it and, you know, basically got stopped on the outskirts of the city and then quietly withdrew. I hate to be so vague as a journalist covering these things, but the simple fact is the Iraqis will announce a lot of operations. They'll go on for a couple of days and then we'll just never hear about anything again. And so sometimes that just means they lost and quit. Right. And, you know, they don't exactly announce it. But this one seems a little bit more organized and a lot more serious, particularly because there's an involvement of, you know, between 15 and 20,000 Shia militias that are very well equipped, have fairly professional leadership, and are definitely coming for this town. I don't think there's any confusion that these dudes want to take down Saddam's hometown. They're trying to send a message to the Islamic State. And if you remember back in June, this was the scene of the execution on video of between 1,000 and about 1,500 unarmed Shia Air Force cadets and volunteers that had been captured by the Islamic State who were just systematically executed, you know, mostly on video. None of that's been forgotten. And so this one's turning into a pretty nasty little fight they got going on. Mm-hmm.
You said 15 to 20,000 Shiite militiamen are the ones doing the fighting?
Well, there's also, I mean, the Iraqi army is involved. The problem, and we learned this in the past few weeks, as America first tried to float the notion that maybe they could try to retake, you know, Mosul mm-hmm. in the next 2 months, and then sort of everybody pointed out they really don't have the troops. But what they do have is actually some quite good special forces units. The Iraqi special forces, they've got a unit called the SWAT team and another called the Golden Dawn Brigade. And those are very well trained, and somewhat combat efficient by Iraqi army standards. But what they don't have is, you know, large numbers of conventional troops organized in, with logistics and ammo and things. The Shia militias are sort of the ones capable of doing that right now because both they're better organized and because of the Iranian leadership and equipping.
Mm-hmm. All right. Now, so, I guess the Islamic State, they failed to take Kobani after a long fight there in Syria, but have they ever had a real challenge, one as big as this to a city that they already have taken that they're trying to defend and hold on to?
Not on this scale. There's been a couple instances. There was a town south of Baghdad, somewhat close to Karbala that the Iraqis and the, mainly the militias did retake from the Islamic State, Jurf al-Sakr, and pretty much just cleared out all of the Sunnis from that area because it was threatening the Shia heartland. And, that was pretty nasty, but much, much smaller. In general, you know, a serious, you know, retaking, so to speak, of Tikrit would be the first major step that we've seen from the Iraqi government to bring back a primarily, if not 100% Sunni area controlled by Daesh, the Islamic State, you know, under their control. This would be kind of their first major victory if they were to succeed.
And just kind of
the problem, of course, is that what we're looking at is chances are a wholesale destruction of the city of Tikrit, and which has been mostly abandoned by its population now for months. And chances are, you know, a lot of war crimey behavior by both sides. These are not nice people, and they really, really hate each other. So, you know, everybody's very, you know, nervous sort of about what this is going to look like when it's over with. My personal suspicion is they're just going to completely flatten the place.
Yeah, well, and so what's the size of Tikrit compared to Mosul or compared to Fallujah?
Well, Fallujah and Mosul are much bigger. You got to understand these are clusters of villages. I've heard 200,000 people live in Tikrit normally. That might or might not include the villages that surround it, which are also being held by the Islamic State. But, you know, most of those people are not there. In fact, I'd say at least half of them are in Erbil and fled here in June to get away from the Islamic State. And people had seen this coming for some months. You know, the Islamic State's actually been forced to start preventing people from leaving because everybody sort of gets that there's going to be, you know, a series of very nasty land battles. So they've tried to flee. At this stage, Mosul, you used to be able to go in and out of, even cross Kurdish lines to go to Kirkuk or Erbil, you know, not easily, but it could be done. And both the Kurds and the Islamic State have really cracked down on that. The Kurds have cracked down on it because they were trying to break up oil smuggling rings that were financing the Islamic State. And the, you know, IS guys had cracked down on it because they realized that basically everybody who could get out of Mosul was leaving. So, you know, but Tikrit was one of those places that emptied out fairly early on. Having said that, there's already widespread reports of civilian casualties. Not everybody goes. The poor people usually stay. Farmers usually stay. Older people have a tendency to stick around. You know, so there's definitely a lot of civilians in place who are under quite a big threat. On one side, you've got the crazy people from the Islamic State, and on the other hand, you've got extremely sectarian and somewhat vicious Shia militias coming for revenge. So it's not a good place to be if you're stuck between those two.
Yeah, I think, you know, people might remember the Badr Brigade from Donald Rumsfeld's El Salvador option and, you know, round them up and power drill them to death and all of that going on back then. These are the same guys again, right? The Badr Brigade led by, what's his name, Amiri, or how do you say it?
Amiri, yeah. Badr Brigade, I'm sorry, they changed it. It's the Badr Organization. They didn't
like
the
MKO,
name
Brigade. Huh?
Yeah, they changed their name to Organization in 2003. You know, yeah, it's them, but it's also some other groups people haven't heard of, you know, like Kataib al-Hezbollah, which is not the Lebanese Hezbollah, but rather an Iraqi version of it. And, you know, and there's a slew of them where they're basically called popular movement committees, and they're under an umbrella organization that's just straight run by the Iranian Revolutionary Guard, Al-Quds Force. Mm-hmm. So these guys are actually pretty networked and equipped, trained and led. And the head of the Quds Force's external wing, General Qasem Soleimani, mm-hmm. has been repeatedly seen at you know, basically in Tikrit directing operations. And, you know, he's a ruthless operator, but an extremely competent tactician and organizer. And his personal attention is not something I would want if I was in the Islamic State's position.
All right. Hold it right there, y'all. It's Mitch Prothero from McClatchy Newspapers, McClatchyDC.com. You hate government? One of them libertarian types? Or maybe you just can't stand the president, gun grabbers, or warmongers? Me too. That's why I invented LibertyStickers.com. Well, Rick owns it now, and I didn't make up all of them, but still, if you're driving around and want to tell everyone else how wrong their politics are, there's only one place to go. LibertyStickers.com has got your bumper covered. Left, right, libertarian, empire, police state, founders, quote, central banking. Yes, bumper stickers about central banking. Lots of them. and, well, everything that matters. LibertyStickers.com. Everyone else's stickers suck. Oh, John Kerry's Mideast peace talks have gone nowhere. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for the Council for the National Interest at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. U.S. military and financial support for Israel's permanent occupations of the West Bank and Gaza Strip is immoral, and it threatens national security by helping generate terrorist attacks against our country. And face it, it's bad for Israel, too. Without our unlimited support, they would have much more incentive to reach a lasting peace with their neighbors. It's past time for us to make our government stop making matters worse. Help support CNI at CouncilForTheNationalInterest.org. All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. It's my show, Scott Horton Show, talking with Mitch Prothro, reporter for McClatchy Newspapers out of Erbil, Kurdistan, and reporting on the Iraq War there. Iraq War 3 now. Well, 3.5 if you count the Clinton years. That's at least half a war, I guess, depending on whose side you're on. Anyway.
Throwing the Iranians in, it's 4.
Yeah, there you go. Yeah, Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan.
No. I meant the Iranians fought their own war here before as well. So,
oh yeah.
I mean, Iraq is where everybody comes together.
Yeah. There you go. Well, it was Carter that helped Hussein start it, and then Ronald Reagan backed both sides. So that's kind of
it's the Middle East. You got to keep your options open.
I guess so.
But yeah, right now, you know, the one thing that we're finding a little unusual about this is that the Shia and the Iranians. Really, I mean, I hate to say it like the Iranians are in charge, but they're being kind of blatant about it. At least on this operation, there's been no U.S. assistance.
Well, and they've even, at least the news reports were that they declined American air cover. Thank you. We'll handle it.
Right. Well, it wasn't as much a decline as much as they just didn't tell anybody they were doing it and have yet to ask for any strikes. So, you know, it's very interesting. Change. Partially, I think it's that they don't want any U.S. advisors looking over their shoulder, reminding them about the Geneva Conventions while this goes on.
Yeah.
And after American all, troops won't really allow them to go for some of the stuff that I think that they're going to go for.
Right. Well, before, when America fought an 8-year war on behalf of these guys, they never admitted it. But and so they were able to continue to do so. And it made sense, I guess, for the Iranians to let the Americans help take Baghdad for the Shia, and then don't let the door hit you in the ass on the way out. But then now, if they can make it an overt reality, and it's hilarious watching the Republicans say, oh my God, there's Iranian influence in Iraq right now. We have no idea how it got that way. But it's for them, it's such a controversy that, you know, they don't want to provide air cover for the Quds force because Israel says that Iran is as bad as the Islamic State or whatever their narrative is. And so maybe it'll help keep us out somewhat.
To a certain extent. I mean, you know, none of the Iraqi groups, with the exception of the Peshmerga here in Kurdistan, want American troops actually in combat. You know, they want to do it themselves with their own way, with their own goals in mind. They even resented, you know, an announcement from the Pentagon saying that, you know, they were hoping to go into Mosul by the spring. The response was, this is Baghdad, this is Iraq, we'll decide when we go into Mosul, the Americans won't. So this could be a little bit of pushback to that. The Kurds, I mean, they would love some special forces on the ground helping them out. And frankly, they've probably earned it. But as far as the rest of them, no, this is a regional problem that'll have regional solutions to a large extent. And, you know, in response to, you know, people who are concerned about Iranian influence in Iraq, I would just say, on what planet aren't they going to have influence here? It's their next door neighbor. They've got millions of co-religionists. Very close economic ties at this stage. The governments have very close ties. This country invaded Iraq, you know, Iran, led to maybe, a million total deaths over the course of a decade of fighting. The Iranians are simply not going to allow this place to get out of hand again. It'd be crazy for them to allow it. So, you know, my response is just, what planet do you live on where a nation of 77 million people with a very competent leadership and military like we see from the Iranians, as ruthless as they might be, of course they're going to be involved in Iraq. Of course this is their sphere of influence. It'd be insanity for it not to be.
Mm-hmm. Hey, let me ask you about this. We got a NATO ally called Turkey. That doesn't seem to be acting like much of an ally, but maybe I don't understand the real politics of who's agreeing with who about doing what. But Pat Buchanan was on the show yesterday and pointed out that the Turks could smash the Islamic State in a fortnight, man. They got 300,000 men and however many thousand tanks and helicopters and planes, and they could go in there and they could take
Mosul. They could find Caliph Ibrahim and this problem right here and now, but they sure don't want to do that. And in fact, they don't seem to have even the slightest motive to clamp down on people coming to Turkey and then traveling from Turkey into Syria and, you know, to go and fight with the Islamic State or with al-Nusra. Why do you think that is?
Well, because they're on their side. I mean, these guys are doing their dirty work for them. They want the Kurds weakened, and they want the, you know, Assad regime replaced with a friendly Islamist regime, much like the one that the Turkish government's trying to implement. So, yeah, I don't think that they're terribly in love with the Islamic State right now, and I think they probably regret letting it grow to the extent that it did. But at this stage, it's very hard to see Turkey as an ally in the fight against extremism in Syria and Iraq. I don't see a lot of behavior on their part that would lead to that. They're much more concerned with their own Kurdish minority, much more concerned with the rise of Kurdish groups that are fighting the Islamic State. To them, they don't see a difference between the PKK and IS. If anything, they think the PKK is worse. So, you know, they've been playing, I think, a very cynical and dirty game. And it's going to be hard to really reconcile that. The direction that Turkey's been going for some time has been, you know, not very NATO-like. Civil liberties are being curtailed on a near monthly basis by the current government, which I'll remind you is democratically elected, but hasn't been behaving very democratically over the last couple of years. So, you know, right now it looks like Turkey's in a stage of transition, and they certainly enabled at least the jihadist influence in Syria that has also spilled into northern Iraq or spilled back and forth, I guess, over the last decade. They had a little bit to do with that. I don't know how much they regret it and how much they plan on going to handle it, but I've yet to see them confront the Islamic State on any front at all. And they're extremely worried about the Kurds who are fighting the Islamic State. So,
I don't hear much rhetoric from the Americans about, God dang, we wish the Turks would clamp down, and they just won't.
Privately, you do. I mean, you gotta be hard. I mean, if you call them out and, you know, this is diplomacy. I mean, if Obama were to come out and say, you know, threaten Turkey with sanctions, knowing the Turks, I don't think that would go well. They're very proud and very nationalistic. And, you know, but behind the scenes, I think that they also require cooperation from Turkey. So you can't really light that bridge completely on fire. Yeah. You know, when you're trying to track guys, the Turks have been somewhat helpful. Although not to the extent I think a lot of the security services would like to see. But if you completely alienate them, then they're not going to help you at all.
All right. Now, so here's the thing, though. Do you think that they've really switched all the way back to Assad at this point? Because it was just in the Wall Street Journal last week that, one, Obama says there is no solution until there's a stable government in Syria, and that means Assad must go. It must be an Assad-free government to be a stable one for the future, said the president. And then, I guess the next day or 2 days later, or maybe it was 2 days before, we're going to start giving the GPS and laser designators to the rebels to start picking targets for our B-1 bombers over there. So it sort of sounds like we're back in 2012 and we're pretending this whole rise of the caliphate never happened and Assad is the bad guy. We've got to take care of him.
I think that that's – I mean, you're not going to back off of saying – Assad has to go, but if you followed the news, there are no more pro-U.S. rebels. The last group was destroyed over the weekend by Nusra, and all of the equipment that they were given was captured. So at this stage, America has very few, if any, allies on the ground in Syria, and from what I can tell, has very little interest in involving itself in Syria at all, beyond maybe doing a little bit of bombing of the Islamic State and making sure the Kurdish areas don't get overrun or helping make sure. But beyond that, I think that, you know, the president seems to have made a decision that there's no good can come from intervening on any level at this point. And, you know, whether it's to protect Assad, to remove Assad, to back a rebel group, not back a rebel group, I don't think they're going to do any of it. None of the options look good, and so why bother? You don't know what you might make worse. But they are intent on degrading the Islamic State through airstrikes, and I'm coming around to the opinion that they've been fairly effective in doing that. I think that this group is hurting a lot worse than people realize. I think, you know, the calculations that I've seen, if any of them can be believed, if any of the data can be believed, They've lost close to a division worth of men and material just from the bombings alone. Kobani was particularly painful for them. And I just put out a story yesterday that basically says that their finances are organized like a pyramid scheme that really only is sustainable if they expand and loot new banks and natural resources to go with what they have. And from what I can tell, I don't think they're running out of money, but they are certainly hurting a lot worse for money than they were 6 months ago. Mm-hmm. And a lot of that does have to do with both cracking down on the oil smuggling, which to their credit, the Turks have done, as well as the Kurds, to try to cut off that money flow. And the U.S. has been blowing up a lot of their equipment and blowing up a lot of their makeshift oil refineries. So this has, I think, had a noticeable effect on the group. But yeah, regional solutions are what's going to solve this. America is not going to solve it. Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Jordan, Syria, these are the people who have to live with this problem for now. These are the people who are going to end up having to come together and, you know, fix it somehow.
Well, you know,
unless you want to invade. If you want to invade, then you can take out the Islamic State. But America does not seem inclined to send the 82nd Airborne into Mosul.
Yeah, hallelujah. Now, so tell me this. Obviously, you know, blowing up a lot of equipment, much of it's stolen from America and the what our army left behind there, and what our, you know, pet Iraqi army left behind in Sunnistan for them to grab. That obviously is pretty hard to replace a bunch of blown up trucks and tanks and artillery pieces and that kind of thing. But, you know, we hear a lot and we have heard for months that the American air campaign has been great PR for the Islamic State and has helped to draw recruits from all over the world and that kind of thing. Although I could see how the recruits are basically, you know, the worldwide recruits are probably not that useful in battle most of the time.
No.
they're good for driving a suicide truck or something like that. But anyway, I wonder whether you score, how you score the benefit, PR wise from being at war with the Americans. Cause they have said that there was an increase of thousands and thousands more people came flooding as soon as the American bombs started falling too.
I think that flood started around the time that the caliphate itself was declared. I have not seen numbers that support a bump just because the Americans were bombing, although it's possible. Maybe I just haven't seen them. Remember, a lot of the information we get about the Islamic State's anecdotal and, sure, you know, not proven by hard stats. But the simple fact is this group militarily is built around a core of battle-hardened Iraqi, to a certain extent Syrian, and surprisingly Chechen, and sort of, you know, the outskirts of the former Soviet Union, Uzbek, Tajiks, Chechens, guys with significant military experience before they got to Syria and Iraq. And this is the core of the group. The more of those guys you kill, you cannot replace them with school shooter jerk-offs from London.
Right.
And, you know, that's what they're finding. The guys that I talk to on the front line say they haven't seen a degradation in the ability of the guys that they're fighting, but most of them turn out to either be foreigners from previous jihad areas, you know, like they say Afghans. I think they mean Uzbeks and Tajiks and things like that, you know, groups like that, not actual Afghans. But, you know, they have seen a drop off in their ability to organize, some drop off in their quality of the equipment. It's not as easy for them to put 50 or 100 pickup trucks to swarm one outpost like they used to be able to, because, you know, the B1 is going to come get you if you do that. And also the Kurds have a lot better anti-tank and anti-armor weaponry than they did a few months ago. So, you know, we're seeing it. As far as, you know, the overall takeaway, is this inflaming things? I don't really know. I think that leaving it there to prosper is just as good an advertisement to, you know, a nutball in Belgium who's looking to join a worldwide caliphate. If he sees it as a successful organization, he's going to want to join. So if it's being bombed, maybe he also wants to join, but I don't know. I just couldn't, you know what I mean? I can't quite distinguish. Like, if you have it successful and they're rolling and everything's going great, that's a great recruiting tool. If the Americans are bombing you, that's also a great recruiting tool.
Well, I don't think that even if they were left to their own devices, I don't think that Sunnistan would prosper under their rule, because they're just totalitarians and that just doesn't work, right? You know?
No, but it certainly looked like it in June. This is when we saw the flood, was when they took Mosul so easily and pushed to the gates of Baghdad. kids sitting in Belgium and London all of a sudden were like, right. Oh my God, it's on. Right. You know, this is what we've all been waiting for. We thought we were all waiting for, you know, and started flooding in. I don't know that by bombing you make it worse. And I mean, there have been reports of civilian casualties, but most of the airstrikes we've seen are fairly precise and in somewhat rural areas against military positions. I mean, I'm sure they've killed civilians. I've seen some numbers bandied around that I don't take that seriously because I don't think anybody quite knows. But with the exception of some of the bombing in Raqqa, you know, I get the daily reports and it's always like a machine gun emplacement 10 kilometers outside of some town. So I don't think they're really whapping the population like you would have seen in, let's say, a World War II style bombing campaign. So I don't know, I guess would be my big answer, but letting them win would definitely also be a boon to recruiting.
Well, now it seems like one real danger would be that they would kind of mellow out. Yeah. Maybe if there was no fighting, maybe they would quit with, you know, back off some of the totalitarianism and actually be able to entrench themselves into the society a little deeper. Whereas now, you know, they're so busy bossing everybody around and taxing them, you know, all the way down to their shoes and whatever, that they're an alien force trying to a great degree, trying to, I mean, I know you said that the leadership, a lot of them are Iraqi, but this isn't typically, traditionally, the way Sunnistan has been ruled by self-described, you know, zealots like this guy and his
No, men. And they're deeply unpopular in the areas they control. I mean, this is an indisputable fact. Your average Syrian or average Mosul resident, as much as they might hate their own central government, are not particularly impressed with these guys. And I talked to dozens of these people. I'd be the first to say if I thought the Islamic State was rising in popularity in the areas that it occupies. And it's not. They're, but, you know, if you're stuck between the Badr Brigade and its high-speed drill bits and crazy Daesh guys cutting everybody's head off for smoking, which actually they don't do, to be fair, but they do cut off a lot of heads, you know, you're screwed, you know, and these people are just going to keep their mouth shut, keep their heads down, try to eke out a living and really hope that the coalition doesn't blow up their house or that they end up in the middle of a house-to-house, you know, gun battle between Iraqi security forces and these, you know, militants. So, you know, that's what we're seeing from a lot of these groups, a lot of the civilians, is just trying to stay out of the way.
All right, everybody. That's Mitch Prothrow writing for McClatchy Newspapers, McClatchyDC.com. Thanks very much, Mitch.
No problem. Always my pleasure. Bye.
All right, y'all. So as airstrikes damage Islamic State, it seeks money, money, money. Massive Iraqi assault begins to retake Tikrit from Islamic State and outside Sultan Abdullah. Iraq, at Kurdish frontline outposts, skepticism abounds about assault on Mosul. Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for Liberty.me, the social network and community-based publishing platform for the liberty-minded. Liberty.me combines the best of social media technology all in one place and features classes, discussions, guides, events, publishing, podcasts, and so much more. And Jeffrey Tucker and I are starting a new monthly show at Liberty.me, Eye on the Empire. It's just $4 a month if you use promo code Scott when you sign up. And hey, once you do, add me as a friend on there at scotthorton.liberty.me. Be free. Liberty.me. All right, you guys, welcome back. So I kept Mitch on until just a, you know, half a minute ago. Just barely wrapped up in time. So if you want to hear the rest of that interview, it'll be at scotthorton.org/interviews. And I know it's a live show and I really should abide by the clock. And I know it sounds horrible when the music starts playing and it's so loud you can't even hear the guy talk anymore. And then in the middle of a sentence or the middle of a word, you go out to break, and then sometimes you come back from a break, and it's the middle of a conversation, and you don't know what you're listening to. Is this even live? Is he playing a recording, and he's not hitting pause at the break, or what is going on? And it must be the most horribly produced radio show in world history, but you know what? I get the interviews done, and I just, what am I supposed to do? Tell the guy to stop talking when I still got all these questions to ask him? The whole thing is ridiculous. Anyway, what a horrible war. Plenty of confirmation bias for me, though. Because, see, here's my theory. The IS guys, they're real jerks. And everybody hates them. And on one hand, maybe they could entrench themselves if they weren't at war all the time a little better. And on the other hand, maybe if the people weren't threatened from all sides, they wouldn't be rallying around the Islamic State at all.
and only against it. And I don't know. I guess, yeah, and, you know, we go over this, you heard it, but then also we went into the break talking about it, too. And, you know, I don't know, you'll have to go back and listen to the archive, I guess, and tell me what you think of that. Obviously, I want no American intervention whatsoever. I don't want to even, I don't know. I guess if you said we're going to take all of the tanks and armored personnel carriers and MRAPs of every description from all of the American domestic police, we're going to give all those to the Kurds, I guess I might say. I hope the ship sinks on the way across the ocean and they all just make nice, artificial reefs for the fishies. I really wouldn't want to see anybody armed. I would like to see all the American police disarmed. But maybe, you know, it's a pipe dream anyway, so. Point is, I want no intervention over there. And so I'm looking for arguments that make it seem like no intervention over there is the best solution. And it just so happens I keep coming across arguments like that. Most of them my own, but then also, you know, things that I glean. So anyway, I admit that I'm biased up front. I'm not pretending to be objective about it. But I've been against all the Iraq wars, except for the first one. But I was only 14. I just want to see some explosions. I was a stupid kid. But I was against Clinton's Cold War against Iraq, and I was against George W. Bush's war in 2003. So I'm just still against it, against all of it. And all the people who said, no, we can't leave now or it'll get worse, they're the ones who made it worse. But anyway, so now that it is worse, I don't want to solve it. I want to stop trying to solve it. And I think that we're lucky in this way that the Mujahideen forces that the American government keeps building up and then fighting and then building up and then fighting again, they're such bastards. There's new pictures, and I don't know, maybe they're fake or whatever, but I don't think so. New pictures came out of the Islamic State guys throwing a guy off the top of a tall building, they claim, for being gay. And the thing is about people like that is people eventually will shoot them to death. It happened before in 2006. We saw it. The local Iraqis were like, you know what? You guys are way too big for your britches. And so we're going to shoot you to death. And then that's what they did. The Sunni population, the fighting aged males of Sunnistan, the ones that John Podhoretz wanted to kill them all. They went outside and they killed Al-Qaeda. That's what they did. Oh, thanks for your help against the Americans and the Shia. All you did was make everything worse for us. Appreciate it. Now you want to conscript our sons and outlaw cigarette smoking and boss everybody around. How about this? We'll shoot you with our AK-47s until you're dead. And then we'll see who you're giving orders to, Mr., Legacy Spot working for Zarqawi, the rapist murderer. I'm paraphrasing, roughly. But then that's what they did. They shot the Al-Qaeda guys, and everybody wants to give David Petraeus credit, but come on. All he did was show up. The only victory that David Petraeus won in the Iraq War was over George W. Bush. We're not going to fight the Sunni insurgency anymore. We're going to let them be, and then we're going to call that peace. And Bush was like, okay, I guess. Hey, I know, let's pretend that Iran has been working against our interests this whole time. We've been working for Iranian interests in Iraq. And Petraeus said, okay. Anyway. They called it the Awakening, but it wasn't because the Americans paid them and armed them. That was why they stopped fighting the Americans. The reason they started fighting the Al-Qaeda guys was because the Al-Qaeda guys are horrible bastards. They are. And, you know, the average, they're like the Khmer Rouge. Only the average Iraqi Sunni has an AK, unlike the average Cambodian circa 1976 or 77, where 75. The Iraqis, they're all armed. And, you know, that was where the interview ended, was was, you know, we were arguing about whether they're better off being bombed or with enemies to fight, or whether they're better off left alone. And the argument kind of cuts both ways, but the way Mitch put it was, hey man, if you're a Sunni and you live in Mosul and it's the Islamic State that you hate, which he says everybody hates them, the Islamic State that's conquered your town, you hate them, but they're the only people standing between you and the Bada Brigade and their power drills. You know, Donald Rumsfeld's men, the Ayatollah Khamenei's men. Then you're going to keep your head down, hope the Islamic State don't cut it off, and wish them luck in killing the Badders. Because the Bada Brigade guys are the boogeyman if you're a Sunni Arab in Iraq right now. Those guys are just as bad as the Islamic State. They're the guys in the WikiLeaks where the Americans are turning guys over to be tortured to the Wolf Brigade. That's just the army of the Supreme Islamic Council, sock puppets of Iran. And they're just as bad. So why would anybody choose ISIS? Only because a foreign enemy. Same as why would anybody choose George Bush? Somebody's out to get us, man, and he's keeping us safe. Keep that guy from power drilling me to death. God, can you imagine dying that way? Boy, I hope I don't die that way. I'm not going to Iraq to try those guys. Anyway, what a horrible war. I guess I feel now a little bit better about doubling down on writing that speech for Friday. I got kind of sick of writing the speech because I've given this speech before. I've written this article for 10 years straight. I've said the same thing for 10 years straight. But, you know, there's a brand new war. And to me right now, you know what it feels like? The beginning of March 2003. And I know it's, you know, not quite that. But I feel this impending doom. There's about to be another Iraq war. And I know that they've been fighting it. And I know that, yes, they'll be rapidly increasing the number of special forces guys and CIA spies and mercenaries in the country and that kind of thing. But I don't know. It's just like I told you a year ago. Who's going to be able to take this land away from these guys? When you have, you know, the Islamic State, if they don't dissolve from within and you insist on seeing their regime destroyed immediately, they're surrounded by enemies, but none of whom can take them out, other than, I guess, the Turks, who won't, except the Americans in a full-scale invasion. And I guess, you know, I don't know, man. Maybe I was wrong to predict that. I just thought that the politics would be that it's absolutely impossible to leave this guy Baghdadi in power. But then again, The joke is, as always, because of all of Washington, D.C.'s treason on behalf of the Israeli state, they're all pretending that Iran is the real enemy and not the Islamic State. So the Israelis have confused the issue in a way that has helped stave off a worse war, in fact, this time, even though they helped get us into it in the first place and want us to bomb Iran.
Hey, y'all, Scott Horton here for WallStreetWindow.com. Mike Swanson knows his stuff. He made a killing running his own hedge fund and always gets out of the stock market before the government-generated bubbles pop. Which is, by the way, what he's doing right now. Selling all his stocks and betting on gold and commodities. Sign up at WallStreetWindow.com and get real-time updates from Mike on all his market moves. It's hard to know how to protect your savings and earn a good return in an economy like this. Mike Swanson can help. Follow along on paper and see for yourself. WallStreetWindow.com.
Hey, all Scott here. If you're like me, you need coffee. Lots of it. And you probably prefer it tastes good, too. Well, let me tell you about Darren's Coffee Company at darrenscoffee.com. Darren Marion is a natural entrepreneur who decided to leave his corporate job and strike out on his own, making great coffee. And Darren's Coffee is now delivering right to your door. Darren gets his beans direct from farmers around the world. All specialty, premium grade, with no filler. Hey, the man just wants everyone to have a chance to taste this great coffee. darrenscoffee.com. Use promo code Scott and you get free shipping. darrenscoffee.com.
All right, you guys, welcome back to the show. I'm Scott Horton. This is my show, The Scott Horton Show. And times are tough all over. I guess especially in Iraq. Everywhere else, too. But no, man, seriously, they've got our casualty rates there. 4,000 killed in February. That's 2007 levels of dying going on there right now. What a nightmare. Still. Forever, I guess. All right. Now, I promise I'm getting to the police state news today, but let me just say real quickly about the Benjamin Netanyahu and the Iranian nuclear deal and this and that. There is no way other than a full-scale war to prevent Iran from having a civilian nuclear program. They're not going to give it up. They used to not hardly have one at all, and Bush could have negotiated a deal with them way back then. They came basically on their knees with the golden offer of 2003. And he told them, screw you. The Swiss diplomat who brought it was reprimanded for daring to bring a golden peace offer from the Iranians. Flint Leverett and Hillary Mann Leverett told the story. It's a true one, man. And so they could have negotiated virtually no nuclear program at all, or you have to have all your fuel imported from somewhere else, or who knows what. Everything was on the table then. By the time Obama took power, they already had, something like 10,000 centrifuges. Now they've got approximately 20,000 installed, but not all operating. Less than half of them actually are operating. But even before the interim deal was signed in November, they started converting all of their 20%, or really 19.75%, low and or medium enriched uranium to fuel plates for their medical isotope reactor. You thought I was going to say weapons grade material. No. They convert it to fuel plates for the medical isotope reactor, the one that Richard Nixon and Gerald Ford sold them back in the day when their fascist sock puppet dictatorship was the private property of the United States of America and its evil world empire. But anyway, and then they started converting all of their 3.6% to the fuel rods necessary to fuel their reactors. And so they have been diminishing their stockpile of uranium that could be used for their so-called breakout capability. Now, Netanyahu's speech yesterday, which, according to him, it's the epitome of the argument. According to him, hey, they could have a breakout time in as little as a year throughout the terms of this deal. And then at the end of the deal, they could have a breakout time in as little as maybe even less than a year or something like that. Okay, but they could break out toward a nuclear bomb right now, and it would take them approximately a year. They ought to be able to make a gun-type nuke. You know, I mean, I don't know if you know. The Hiroshima bomb that America used on Hiroshima in 1945 was, they didn't even test it. They knew it would work. It was a simple kind of a thing. You just shoot basically a uranium slug through a tube, through a rifle barrel or a shotgun barrel at a uranium target, at a pit, and blam, that's enough to cause enough of a fission chain reaction to kill 300,000 or 400,000 Japanese people. Well, it was the Nagasaki bomb was the Trinity test in New Mexico, the implosion plutonium bomb that they weren't as certain would work. The Iranians presumably could make a gun-type nuke, although they wouldn't be able to deliver it anywhere except, in the back of a flatbed truck or something, I guess. But they could do that in a year now. They could do that in a year anytime since, say, 2006 or 2007, at least. They could be making weapons-grade uranium. Netanyahu says inspections, why the North Koreans kicked the inspectors out, turned the cameras off, broke the seals, made nukes. Well, one, that's because George W. Bush provoked them into doing so when we had a perfectly good deal that America violated. Just for one quick footnote, read How Bush Pushed North Korea to Nukes by Gordon Prather at antiwar.com. How Bush Pushed North Korea to Nukes. And it tells, I think, pretty much the whole story right in there. That may be actually Gordon Prather's last article. No, I guess not. Anyway, Gordon Prather at antiwar.com. And then, secondly, it still took them a long time to make a bomb. And then America did not attack North Korea They could have in the time between when they kicked the inspectors out and actually had one made and ready to test, and which, by the way, it fizzled because it's not easy to do an implosion bomb. But in the time, they could have attacked North Korea. They had plenty of time to attack North Korea, but they didn't, thank goodness. And then what happened? Nothing. North Korea has not used their atomic bombs, and they've tested three of them. Two of them were fizzles, and as far as I know, there never was enough information released about the third one to know how successful it was. But anyway, they haven't attacked anybody with them. Pretty awesome responsibility holding on to a nuke, I guess. But anyway, it still goes to show that, yeah, they could withdraw from the Non-Proliferation Treaty and make nukes, kick the inspectors out, begin a program to make nukes, but they could have done that all this time, and they haven't done that. So, what the hell kind of argument is that? That in 10 years, they could do what they could do right now. And so we shouldn't make an agreement that'll basically guarantee the status quo, which is a peaceful, safeguarded nuclear program, only more inspected than ever. Because crisis, that's a crisis. A civilian nuclear program is tantamount to a nuclear weapons program. Doesn't matter what the truth is. It only matters what Netanyahu would have you believe, I guess. And meanwhile, he has no answer for what to do about it. He says these people, if they did have a single nuke, they would annihilate Israel with it, which one little atom bomb, a few kilotons, would not destroy all of Israel anyway. What are they going to do, nuke Jerusalem? You really think so? And anyway, or even Tel Aviv? And then anyway, the fact that Israel has hundreds and hundreds of nuclear weapons, that won't deter them. But if we put sanctions on them, well, that'll make them lay down on their bellies and cry uncle and give up their entire nuclear program. If only we just put more sanctions on them and cry, get down on your belly and give up your entire nuclear program. Who thinks that's going to work? Nobody. Nobody. So what is it that he wants? He wants war. He wants America to go to war. And, you know, Justin Raimondo's article points out the most important quote in the lying, ridiculous speech, and that was the part about how, you know, basically, I don't care whether you guys are going to do it, because, you know, yada, 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 the Holocaust, yada, 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 we'll go ahead and start the war ourselves, as though this has anything to do with that at all. And, of course, as Justin says, that's a threat to drag us into war. If Israel attacks Iran, America will be involved immediately, of course. And, of course, our Congress stood up and applauded.
Hey, Al, Scott Horton here to tell you about this great new book by Michael Swanson, The War State. In The War State, Swanson examines how Presidents Truman, Eisenhower, and Kennedy both expanded and fought to limit the rise of the new national security state after World War II. This nation is ever to live up to its creed of liberty and prosperity for everyone. We are going to have to abolish the empire. Know your enemy. Get The War State by Michael Swanson. It's available at your local bookstore or at Amazon.com in Kindle or in paperback. Just click the book in the right margin at ScottHorton.org or TheWarState.com.
In America today, teachers, cops, judges, and other so-called public servants make far more than the average taxpayer. And their pensions? Well, if the people knew, they'd join us. That's where you come in. Taxpayers United of America is embarking on a great new project to train activists how to take on the parasites in your communities. The entire process, from prying loose the facts to disseminating the truth to the people. The first of these great workshops is in Orlando, Saturday, March 7th. It's just $25. For more information, go to taxpayersunited.org/govpensions.
All right, you guys. Man, I never know what all to cover on here. There's so much stuff. check this out from Reuters, man. They're going to, and the Moon of Alabama blog, they're going to rebrand the Al-Nusra Front as the moderates now. Oh, yeah. ISIS are the extremists. The Al-Nusra Front. I wonder, are they going to take them off the terrorist list? Are they going to get these guys? How much CIA money does it take to the Al-Nusra Front to get them to publicly denounce Ayman al-Zawahiri? Or does the Obama government care at all that these guys are sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri? I guess they don't care. They've been backing him all along, you know, at least indirectly. Leaders of Syria's Nusra Front are considering cutting their links with al-Qaeda to form a new entity backed by some Gulf states trying to topple President Bashar al-Assad. Wouldn't you just know, this group of guys, they finally defeated the last of the so-called FSA moderates. And then the moderates took over from within, man, and reformed them from the inside like a Democrat. Like a technocrat. And made everything okay now. And now Nusra, yeah, they cut off people's heads and they do suicide attacks and they love and honor the memory of Osama bin Laden and are sworn loyal to his successor. But hey, you know, they're anti-Assad and Israel likes that. I mean, I don't know what else to tell you. Just because Turkey and Qatar and Saudi like that, meh, that's one thing. But that's what Israel wants. And so that's why the Americans are willing to go along with this stuff. Oh, they're going to change their name. The name of Nusra will be abandoned, said the new guy. Unreal. And then, let's see, at the Moon of Alabama blog, they had more about that. A quote from Clapper. Moderate these days, that's the director of national intelligence, moderate these days is increasingly becoming anyone who's not affiliated with ISIS. Oh, really? You're guilty of high treason. I mean, dude, what are you going to do? What do you call that? What else do you call that? You know what? The Islamic State, they murdered some Americans over there fighting in their territory. But al-Qaeda has attacked the United States of America repeatedly. So, no. No, wrong. Director of National Intelligence. Actually, you're guilty of high treason. And if anything, ISIS and Assad are the moderates compared to al-Nusra because al-Nusra are sworn loyal to Ayman al-Zawahiri, the butcher of New York City. Jerk. Well, moderate these days, says James High Treason Clapper, is increasingly becoming anyone who's not affiliated with ISIL. And so, you know, we are attempting to engage with them. And that's the whole point of the train and equip proposal. Project that the Department of Defense is gearing up for is to vet, recruit, and train and equip opposition in sufficient size and capability to actually make a military difference against the Assad government, he's saying. And so one of our challenges is, again, the recruiting and vetting part. So we picked people that are not only moderate, whatever that is. They are moderate, whatever that is. But also, we have to be sensitive to complying with international rules of law, which in this environment is a pretty tough order. Yeah, because it's against the international law to back international terrorist groups like al-Qaeda. Hey, guess what, Scott? When you call it al-Qaeda in Syria, then it's okay. And I know, I'm just beating the same old dead horse I've been telling you since 2011. But still true. And I guess more true than now. They're gonna rebrand Jabhat al-Nusra. I'm going to call it the Association of Moderates. I don't know. I guess it's so blatant is the only thing that bothers me. Otherwise, it's still the same story as always. I don't know, man. What a funny place this place is, this world. All right. What time is it? Oh, man. All right, I'll tell you this. In the next segment, all I'm going to do is talk about police stories. I got so many of them, and I got to get them out of the way, or else they won't have been gotten out of the way. But right now, I'll tell you this about the Ukraine thing. Ukraine ceasefire holding, but U.S. keeps threatening Russia. That's the headline at news.aniwar.com. That's actually a few days old. But that's more or less true. I mean, there's artillery fire going back and forth somewhat, but apparently you know, the so-called leaders exercising authority are ordering an end to that. They're trying to abide by it. Nobody's ordering official assaults and whatever, so militia guys are still trading some blows, but more or less the war is over for now. Sure hope that holds. As far as the murder of the guy, Boris Nemtsov, however you say it, I guess the only thing really notable about that is nobody really knows who killed him. But look how eager the Americans are to accuse Putin of it. Well, I don't know. Yeah, it could have been him. The guy's a politician. You think he doesn't murder people? Of course he murders people. But, so, prove it. I don't know. If it's the kind of thing where it looks like the sort of thing he would have done, well, that right there is obvious motive for someone trying to make Putin look bad. Killing one of his enemies. And who knows, you know, who was behind it. Very well could have been Putin. Very well could have been someone acting on behalf of Putin who wasn't even asked. Very well could have been people that we never even heard of. But the point is, look at the consensus. Mean old Putin murders again, they say. And they don't really care what's true. So Victoria Nuland was testifying before the Senate this morning. That's Robert Kagan's wife. And, man, I don't know the name of the lady congressman who was the chair of the committee meeting. But, man, she was going off. And at one point got right to it when she said that, you know, we must defend our allies. We demand to know. It was funny the way it works, the dynamics in the room. Everybody knows she's Robert Kagan's wife. Everyone knows she's a neocon. That basically she's an infiltrator in the neoliberal Obama administration. She's really more of a Republican type. So it's sort of, you know, us and you against Obama, right, lady? It's sort of the context of the way that they're talking to her. And making her, you know, come up with and defend, you know, come up with answers to defend why we're not giving them weapons yet. Where in the interagency process is it? Yeah, sure, we have a ceasefire now, but that's why we need to introduce a bunch more weapons into the situation on one side. Wait, what? Onto a side that we can't, that couldn't possibly win if they actually got into a real tangle with Russia. But never mind that. And then in the next breath, or maybe the very same breath, but with a comma or a semicolon in there or something, these are our allies. I think it was a Democrat congressman lady, congress lady said, they're not our allies. We don't have a treaty with Ukraine. Now, I care about human life in Ukraine, but that doesn't mean that my government ought to be bound to theirs. And in fact, name me one good reason other than Joe Biden's son's salary why America has any interest in Ukraine whatsoever other than sticking it to Russia and causing a problem for ourselves. Yeah, see? Exactly.
Hey, I'll Scott Horton here. It's always safe to say that one should keep at least some of your savings in precious metals as a hedge against inflation. If this economy ever does heat back up and the banks start expanding credit, rising prices could make metals a very profitable bet. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Inc. has been helping people buy and sell gold, silver, platinum, and palladium, and they do it well. They're fast, reliable, and trusted for more than 35 years. And they take Bitcoin. Call Roberts & Roberts at 1-800-874-9760 or stop by rrbi.co.
All right, you guys. Welcome to the show. So, no show tomorrow or the next day. Tomorrow I'm traveling, and then Friday I'm giving a talk in New Hampshire at the New Hampshire Liberty Forum. That's nhlibertyforum.com. Check it out there. 2 o'clock at the Radisson in Manchester, New Hampshire. So tomorrow I got to get my act together and get on a plane and all that. The rest of today, I've got to finish writing this speech, and then I got to go through and delete a bunch of crap and pare it down to something manageable. I got too many stories to tell and too little time to tell them in. So I'm going to have to cut some of this down. But anyway, it's going to be against the war. Manchester, New Hampshire at the Radisson there. Friday at 2 o'clock. So tomorrow will be a best of tomorrow. Oh, but Friday I will be live on the show in Manchester. I'll be doing a live spot there because Ian Freeman and Free Talk Live are going to have it all set up. So actually I'm only taking tomorrow off, but Friday I'll be on. My show's going to be, you know, noon to 2 Eastern, and then right after that I go on. So maybe I'll do my Ukraine speech on the show, and then I'll do my anti-war speech on the stage, or maybe I'll rehearse my anti-war speech for the stage on the show. Yeah, you guys might have to suffer through that, because I always get nervous before these things. Even though I sit here and talk to a gigantic auditorium worth of you people live every day, at least. It's different. It's weird when I got to look at you, and you're all looking at me and stuff. Weirdos. All right. The human cost of the border security buildup. This is in the Texas Observer. I'm working on getting this lady on the show. This is about Texas State Police machine gunning people to death for trying to get a job. AKA conservatism in practice. It's horrifying. Here's more conservatism for you. I told you this before, but I got to mention it again. It's at boingboing.net. Man gets life in prison for selling $20 worth of weed to an undercover cop. So it's not like he got busted for being a drug dealer even at all. He was just a bum, a hobo, a vagrant, a homeless man, desperate and hungry, was entrapped into just going and scoring a bag of weed for an undercover cop. Not even really selling it to him. Here, give me the money. The guy gives him $25 and he gets to keep $5. That's not even selling him a bag. That's getting him a bag. Life in prison. Because it makes conservatives feel good. That's the only answer to why. There is no other why. It makes conservatives feel good. Oh, yeah. And it's welfare for a bunch of parasites, otherwise known as police, who otherwise might have to get a job. Oh, and the judges and the rest of the scum. Again, I mentioned this one too, but I'm happy to mention it again. Tamir Rice, the 12-year-old who was murdered by a cop up there in Cleveland, Ohio, for having a pellet gun, failed to exercise due care. He should have dodged those bullets, and it's his fault that he's dead. It's a 12-year-old boy's fault that a cop drove up and killed him to death. Oh, and then they stood there and refused to render any aid whatsoever, which is a felony you would go to prison for in itself. If you walked up on somebody who'd been shot and refused to help them, you could go to prison for that. These cops shot the kid and then stood there. And then when his sister ran up to try to help him, they tackled her, beat the crap out of her, and handcuffed her. She was 14. And threw her in the back of the police car. And then they sat there, praying the boy would die. Oh, please die, please die, please die. Otherwise, you know, he could testify. And then it just so happened there was an FBI agent in the neighborhood who heard it on the police scanner and came over there and said, "What the hell are you guys doing, man?" And began to render aid to the kid. And the ambulance came a short time later. He died the next day. But it was the 12-year-old murder victim's fault. Why? Because it was a cop that is the criminal who did the crime. That's why. Because the law doesn't apply to the law, dummy. What, do they tell you that it did? That there's a rule of law? That government employees are just citizens like the rest of us? That's a lie. That's not true. They could murder your son. Murder your 12-year-old boy and say it's his fault for getting in the way of my bullet. Look, Your Honor, I was shooting my bullets and this little black kid jumped in front of my bullets. I want a judgment against his mother.
Too bad he's dead. I can't, you know, put him in prison and make him work for 25 cents an hour for assaulting my bullets. That's the rule of law in America, the oldest democracy with the greatest constitution. Oh, and a population of 300 million people who just love being free. They love being free so much, the Americans, that they've made it this way. Lawyers wary of claim about Chicago police black site. They say, hey, that's great PR for getting people to pay attention to it, but this has been going on in Chicago for a long time. There's no rule of law in Chicago. You're poor, you're black, they torture you into saying what they want you to say. It's as simple as that. It's like Dick Cheney there all the time. And here's one, a Liberty Crier about how all the local police in Chicago jump on board with the cops and defend the whole thing and spin the whole thing. This lawless torture prison that they kept off site, where the arrested are held out with their names not entered, not booked, not entered into the computer where their lawyers can find them. And that's a whole series in The Guardian by Spencer Ackerman you might want to look at there too. Supreme Court of Ohio rules gun penalties don't apply to cops. Get this. A cop actually got prosecuted for shooting a guy on a motorcycle for no reason and paralyzing him. Give me your ID. Okay, the guy reaches for his wallet. Bang, bang, bang. Oh, I thought he was reaching for a gun. He actually got somehow prosecuted. What? Some weird force seeping through from another dimension or something. But then they got the extra penalty added on for using a firearm in the commission of a felony thrown out. Because that doesn't apply to cops. The Supreme Court ruled that this law that says if you commit a crime, you get a higher penalty if you commit the crime with the gun does not apply to police. You can read about it here, cleveland.com. These guys, they get away with murder. By the way, yeah, the guy, the cop that shot Tamir Rice to death, him and his buddy who both sat there and failed to render aid, they didn't get in any trouble whatsoever for that. None. I don't even know if they got I guess they may have been punished with a 2-week paid vacation. The court just ruled a firearm specification is not intended to deter a peace officer from possessing a firearm. He's required to carry a firearm and permitted to use it when necessary, right? Not in defense, but in the course of carrying out his duties, which may be just using aggressive force, they admit right there. But the General Assembly did not intend the firearm specification to apply to a police officer who fired a gun issued to him to protect himself, fellow officers, and the public from a person he thought was about to brandish a weapon. But he was convicted of a criminal act and shooting the guy. I don't know what, if it was, you know, involuntary manslaughter or what. What was he convicted of originally? I don't think they say. He was convicted of felonious assault. He was convicted of felonious assault. And then they say, no, but this penalty shouldn't apply to him because the defense that he put on, that the court didn't buy at the time. Imagine that. So you thought for a minute the law applied to a cop. Oh my God, a cop was prosecuted. That proves Scott wrong. And then in the case of the cop that got prosecuted, the court rules that no, the law does not apply to police. At least half of what he was convicted under here does not apply to him. By the way, Jessica Hernandez, this one got a lot of attention because it was a young transgendered person. And so became kind of a cause celeb on the part of the sexual minority type communities. The autopsy came out and proved that the cop lied. She was not shot from the front, but from the side as she was driving by. They murdered her and they lied about it. Of course. Oh man, and I got a ton more. Just go to libertycrier.com and cry your eyes out. See you tomorrow. Thanks, guys.